Father Bob Warren of the Franciscan Friars of the Atonement. Thank you for listening to this rebroadcast of the Ave Maria Hour radio show. The Friars' popular Ave Maria Hour was first brought to the radio airwaves in 1939, recorded in New York City and on the mountainside grounds at Graymore, a home in Garrison, New York. These timeless classic stories of the Bible and the lives of the saints came to life each week through dramatic reenactment by professional actors and actresses. You know, friends, Christ once said, "Do not hide your treasure under a bushel." In saying this, he meant share your gifts, share your talents. The Friars of the Atonement feel the message in these broadcasts remains as powerful and timely as when they were originally aired, and we are so happy to be able to share them with you today. To learn more about the missions and ministries of the Friars of the Atonement, I invite you to visit our website, www.atonementfriars.org. In the meantime, sit back and enjoy this rebroadcast of the Ave Maria Hour.
Saint Catherine of Genoa.
Raise your glasses, all of you, and drink to the finest, gayest, most generous host in all Genoa, to Julian!
To Julian! Julian!
Finest, gayest, most generous host in all Genoa, Julian Adorno. But what of his wife, the gentle Catherine? What of her? This beautiful girl who weeps so softly, this is Catherine.
My child, my poor, unhappy child.
Night after night, Father. Week after week.
I know, I know.
Same faces always, the same godless faces, same voices, the same jests, the same laughter.
Peace, peace.
Oh, Father.
I'll speak to him.
It won't do any good.
But he needs you. You must help him, my child.
I've tried, Father, but I failed, and I can't stand it any longer.
Pray, child, pray for strength.
I have, but God has not answered. Father, why didn't you take me in when I came to the convent?
You were too young, child. Moreover, your father and mother refused to give their permission.
And 3 years later doomed me to this.
Surely you loved Julian or you wouldn't have married him.
I was fond of him, yes. And I knew it would please my father if I married one of the noble Adornos. A wonderful marriage. But see it now, Father. A tragic failure.
You must make it a success.
And how shall I do that? Shall I wear fine silks and costly jewels? I've never wanted more than the simplest habit of a nun and a rosary. Shall I laugh and sing and jest? Shall I welcome sinners in my home and honor them?
My child.
Shall I shut out God? Shall I dishonor him? That is the decision I must make, Father.
No, my child. You must rescue Julian from himself and return him to God.
But you don't understand, Father. Julian has no time for God.
And no patience with you.
Julian.
Good evening, Father.
Good evening, my son.
I trust you haven't been inconvenienced.
Inconvenienced?
My wife sent for you, didn't she? So she might weep again. On your shoulder. It's becoming a habit with you, my dear Catherine. A disgusting habit.
Julian, my
Forgive
son.
Forgive me, Father, for keeping you. I know you're in a hurry.
You're sending me away, Julian?
Frankly, yes.
you mustn't go, Father. You mustn't leave me.
I can't remain, my child. I have no right. But neither have you the right, Julian, to deny your wife the ministration of a priest.
She has no need of your ministrations. She deserves condemnation for her shameful, unwifely behavior.
And your own behavior. What of that?
If you have reference to my drunkenness...
And your ungodliness.
Ungodliness, Father? You know very well I attend church quite regularly.
And is that enough, my son?
Oh, really, Father, this is hardly the time or place to discuss.
All time is God's time, and all places are also his, except those places closed to him by sinful men.
You'll be good enough to leave, Father.
Yes, I'll leave, Julian. I must hasten to pray for you. Good night, my child.
Father, pray for me also.
Unceasingly.
Well, you've done it again, haven't you?
Please.
I warned you the last time. I told you I'd not have you running off to your room while a single guest of mine remained.
I had to, Julian. I couldn't stand it.
I also warned you never to bring that priest here again.
But there's no one else.
You disobeyed me.
Julian.
But for the last time. There's a place on the outskirts of Genoa. It was abandoned lately by one of our peasants. It shall be yours now to live in. Alone. Without visitor or priest.
And so, cast out by Julian, Catherine was taken to the place to which she had been virtually condemned. It was winter. Day after day, week after week, cold and often hungry, Catherine remained alone. And then one night in the darkness, a door swung open on its rusted hinges and closed. And the sound of footsteps echoed throughout the shuddering house. Another door, and the sudden flare of torchlight.
Julian! Julian.
You look ill. You're pale and thin.
I want for nothing.
You're quite happy then?
If you are.
You're willing to remain here?
If you wish it.
You're obedient now.
You asked for obedience.
Do you want to come home?
If you wish me to come home.
Catherine.
Julian. Julian.
Catherine.
I'll try, Julian. I'll try.
So, having promised to try to live as Julian wished her to live, Catherine was permitted to return home. Then, as though determined to test her in the extreme, Julian embarked on a round of revelry that never seemed to end. Dawn after dawn saw the castle-like mansion of the Adornos ablaze with light and resounding with drunken laughter. And dawn after dawn saw Catherine, regally gowned and richly bejeweled, bidding the last of Julian's guests.
Good morning, of course. The night is over.
And so's the party. Worst luck.
It was wonderful while it lasted, though. There'll be another tonight.
If that husband of yours doesn't sleep through the rest of the week.
Poor Julian. He was so tired. He'll recover, though, by tonight. You'll see.
I hope so. Well, goodbye.
Until tonight.
Well, she said you'd recover, but I didn't believe her. It's amazing, Julius. positively amazing. I don't see how you do it, either of you.
Well, it's a secret we share, just the two of us. But tell me, have you seen her?
Well, your wife?
Yes, yes. The last time I saw her, she was talking to you.
Oh, and that was more than an hour ago. Where do you suppose she's gone?
I don't know. But I'm going to find out.
Would you let me...
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, Giacomo, have you seen Catherine?
No.
No, eh? Well, excuse me, would you please, out of my way? Thank you. Thank you. Oh, Reno. Reno.
Hi, Junior.
Have you seen her?
Who?
My wife, of course.
I can't see anything.
Oh, you drunken fool. Let me through here, please. Would you please let me out? Oh, Alberto.
Yes.
Alberto, have you seen her?
Who?
Who? Catherine, my wife, of course.
Oh, no. I haven't seen her.
Hasn't anyone seen her? Drunken fools, every one of them. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Let me through here. Oh, Luigi. Luigi.
Hi, Julian.
Have you seen Catherine?
Oh, no. I've had too much to drink. I haven't seen anyone.
Hasn't anyone seen her? Let me through here. Please, out of my way, you fools. Let me through here. I've got to get... Oh, Vincenzo! Vincenzo, have you? Vincenzo! Be still! Be still, I say! All of you, be still!
My wife. My wife, where is she? No one answers. No one knows, it would seem. Well, perhaps I do. Now get out. All of you, get out!
Julian.
You ran away.
I knew you'd send me away if I told you.
You promised.
And I kept my promise. I tried, Julian.
And now?
I've come back to this house, and I shall stay here as I did before, alone.
But why?
It's no use, Julian. I can't live as you want me to live, for pleasure alone.
And so you left, without a word.
There was nothing to say. I tried and failed. I tried to laugh, but I could only weep and pray.
You seemed content, even happy.
There was misery in my soul and torment.
Come home, Catherine.
No, Julian.
I need you, Catherine. I know so little of God and his ways. Help me, Catherine, to know more.
Julian. Oh, Julian.
A new life began. And Julian and Catherine lived it together in peace. And as Julian walked along the way of Christ, Catherine visited the poor and needy in their wretched little hovels, and she fed and clothed them. She went to the sick and dying in the great hospital of Genoa, and she bound up their wounds and comforted them. She prayed for them and wept for them. Then, when she was not yet 26, Julian fell ill. Hour after hour, day into night and night into day, she sat at his bedside. But Julian remembered his youth, and he trembled with great fear.
I'm dying, Catherine. And I'm afraid.
But there's nothing to fear, Julian.
Death. What of death?
What of life? Eternal life.
But
judgment. What of that?
What of mercy? God's mercy.
But will there be mercy for me?
Oh, my dear, you are sorry, truly sorry that you offended God. You've shown that these last years. You have been wonderful, my Julian. That is all God's mercy asks. So rest, my dear.
Pray for me, Catherine. Go to that little shrine we built in the garden and pray.
I kneel, O God, and pray for him I've grown to love. I kneel, O God, before this little shrine he fashioned with his own eager hands when first he turned from the world unto thee. I kneel, O God, and weep for him who weeps with sorrow. Grant him one glimpse of heaven while yet he dwells on earth. And with that glimpse, destroy his dread of death. Grant him, O God, a good and gentle death, that he may come to thee at peace.
Catherine. Is that you?
Yes, Julian.
I must have slept a moment. I dreamed a dream. It was all of heaven and of peace. There was a great stretch of darkness. But in the distance, there was light. A great wondrous, shiny light. And in that light, there was peace.
Julian.
I think I shall sleep again. Perhaps I shall dream again.
Yes, my dear. Sleep. Sleep and dream in God's eternal peace.
Julian was dead, and in her saintly way, Catherine rejoiced that she had been able to bring him back to God. But there were years and years ahead for her, years of gentle service and weary labor. And to these years she looked forward with unselfish eagerness. She resumed her duties at the hospital, and then one day, she was called before the council in charge.
You know these gentlemen, Catherine, I'm sure. Senora? You've met them all at one time or another.
I think so, yes.
And they know you, Catherine, as all Genoa does, it seems.
Yes, all Italy, in fact.
Yes, Catherine, you're becoming quite famous.
Oh, I can't think why.
Well, your work here in the hospital, your gentle ways. Gentlemen, this young lady, with no knowledge at all of medical ways and means, can do almost as much for a patient as all the doctors in Genoa. The only trouble is that, well, she always is so busy with tasks she seeks for herself. I found her in the kitchen the other day, scrubbing the floors. The one who does it regularly was ill, it seems. So our Catherine said nothing and proceeded to take matters into her own hands. She needn't have done it. You see, we doctors can't be without her. Our patients won't have anyone else. But, well, there's not enough of her to go around, it seems. That's why I suggest that she be dismissed.
Dr. Collini.
And re-engaged, of course, in a strictly supervisory capacity.
Oh, I... Thank you. Thank you.
And so Catherine of Genoa took charge of the great hospital of that city And before long, as had been predicted, her name was spoken reverently throughout all Italy. Nothing escaped her watchful care. She served the sick with incredible tenderness and performed even the meanest tasks with a joyful smile. But few knew of Catherine's personal austerities, her fasts and self-imposed penances for poor sinners in this world. And fewer still knew of her long, lingering illness until her beautiful face was already deeply etched with pain. Then they came to her and anxiously begged her,
"Rest, Catherine. You must rest."
"How can I, Dr. Collini? There is so much to do."
"And so many to do it. You'd only let them."
"But don't you see? I can't rest."
"But you must. You're ill."
"Of what?"
"I don't know. I can't be sure as yet."
"Then until you are sure, let me continue as usual. I think you'll find, however, that there's really nothing wrong with me. No illness at all of the body. And so I'm beyond your help."
"I don't think I understand. What do you mean?"
"I wonder if I can explain. I wonder if you'd understand if I said I've been given so much of heaven on earth that it's only right that I should taste of purgatory."
Often during the years that followed, it seemed that Catherine must die. Once, in fact, at the very point of death, unable to take any kind of food, she whispered to her father confessor,
"If you would only give me my Lord 3 times, I would be cured."
When she had received Holy Communion the 3rd successive time, she rose from her bed and went about her work. But she continued to suffer. When the news of her suffering became known throughout the land, prayers were offered up that she might be spared such torment. There were a few, however, as there always will be, who doubted. And among them was a certain Genoese, who for years had dwelt in England as personal physician to the king. It was he who came one day to the hospital where Catherine still labored and demanded that she see him. She was sent for. While he awaited her appearance, he fairly fumed with rage.
"It's unthinkable, Collini, to permit such things to be said."
"Such things as what?"
"That this...
this holy lady, shall we say?"
"A holy lady she may be, but hardly qualified to diagnose her own condition, which I understand is what she has done."
"It was not a diagnosis, Dr. Boerio, but a simple and sincere belief that her illness is no illness at all, but a great penance she must endure, according to God's will."
"And do you, Dr. Collini, subscribe to this fantastic nonsense?"
"I've lived many years as a doctor in the midst of death. I've seen many strange things occur at the moment of death. Life when all hope of recovery was gone. And death when recovery seemed certain, though not to be desired."
"Recovery is always to be desired, and it's our duty as doctors to fight for recovery."
"And God's privilege to defeat us when he sees fit."
"Oh, it seems you should have studied religion, doctor."
"I have, in a way, from our Holy Lady, Catherine. She's taught me many things, and through her I've come to depend greatly on the power and will of God."
"In that case, I sincerely hope it shall never be my misfortune to be numbered among your patients. I should hardly feel secure if I were."
"Excuse me, doctor."
"Of course."
Oh, Catherine, come in. Come in."
"Thank you."
"Catherine, this is the famous Dr. Boerio. He wants to see you and talk with you."
"I am very honored."
"Not at all, not at all. Sit down."
"Thank you."
"About this illness of yours."
"Yes."
"Why do you refuse treatment?"
"But I don't."
"But I understood..."
"Misunderstood, I'm afraid, Dr. Boerio. Our Lady Catherine here has never refused treatment. It's simply that we doctors have never been able to prescribe treatment."
"Ah, I see. Well, What would you say, my lady, if I were to prescribe treatment? After proper diagnosis, of course.
I should be most pleased, Doctor, if you would. But I am afraid it would be a waste of your time.
Let me be the judge of that, please.
Of course, Doctor. And God bless you, I pray, for your kind concern.
It can't be. And yet here is the proof before me. 20 days of proof.
I am sorry, Doctor.
I've considered every possibility, tried everything, and without success.
It was courageous of you to try, Doctor, in the face of certain failure.
But I never considered failure. I was certain of success. I was sure, very, very sure, that you were guilty of scheming a legend, that you were lying to surround yourself with a false aura of sanctity. I was mistaken. And I can't even ask your forgiveness.
If you did, I should answer, there is nothing to forgive. I should like to feel, however, that when at last the suffering becomes too great and I can bear it no longer, you'll try again to ease my pain. But then, Doctor, do it with a prayer.
The end came in the fall of the year 1510. After 2 weeks of constant torment, during which the saintly Catherine partook of nothing but the sacred host, she was conscious to the last, her mind clear and her voice strong, as she spoke her last words. Those same words our blessed Lord spoke so many years before.
Into thy hands, O Lord, I commend my soul.